Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the final installment on our mini-series on Megillat Rut. For people who I just realized I didn't yet put the source sheet in the chat. So there you go. Now, if you click on the chat, you'll be able to see the source sheet. But we are turning now to the final chapter of Megillat Rut. And there are really two questions that I want to ask and answer today. Two, they're very different questions, but nonetheless interesting ones to ask, which are very important. The first of which is, who is the central character of Megillat Rut? If we were making Rut into a movie, and you have your, you know, in the Oscars, it's always, you know, leading actor, main actor in a movie, and then you kind of have the support, I don't actually know the terms, you have like the support actors, you have the, you know, and the question is, who's filling what roles? Obviously, our instinct is to assume that the central character is Rut, for good reason, that main reason being, we named the book after her, and she clearly is a key character in the story, that which is obvious. Almost all of the major narratives revolve around Rut. She is clearly and obviously central. We don't really need to take too long to try and prove the fact that Rut is central to Megillat Rut. The clue is in the name. But we've seen other potential figures who might be the central figure to Megillat Rut. First and foremost, Boaz. Boaz, as we've kind of seen, is the hero of the story. He obviously doesn't appear in chapter one, but in chapter two, he appears. We focused on that 2 weeks ago. In chapter three, he appears. We focused on that last week. And the very fact that the most kind of obvious thing to focus on, admittedly for me, rather than necessarily for everyone, but the fact that the most obvious thing to seemingly focus on was the role Boaz is playing in this story, his character, how positive a figure he is in this story, seems to suggest that Boaz is the key character of the story. After all, he's the Goel, he's the redeemer of Rut. He is going to be the great-great-great-great-grandfather of David HaMelech, of King David, as much as Rut is the great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother. So if we're talking about Rut being the central character, it kind of makes sense to also start thinking that Boaz is also a major character of this story. We don't call it Megillat Boaz, we call it Megillat Rut. But fundamentally, Boaz might be just as significant a character as Rut. However, there is a third character, and ironically, we've not talked about this figure probably as much as we've talked about Boaz or Rut, but nonetheless, is probably actually the most important figure in the story, not because of the quote-unquote screen time that they get, even though they get a good chunk of it, but because everything in the story very clearly serves their aims and their goals. And that's Naomi, Rut's mother-in-law. Perhaps calling it Megillat Naomi would actually in many ways make more sense. We meet her in the very first verses. She is the sole survivor of her family after they have moved to Moab. She moves back to the land of Israel. And basically, and I touched on this last week, all of the trials and travails that we assume Rut is facing are actually Naomi's. She is the one who's struggling to find a source of sustenance. She's the one struggling to find food. She is also the one who's trying to perpetuate her own family line. And we'll kind of see that this is going to be a core theme. I said that the two things I want to talk about aren't related, but as I say that out loud, I realize they are related by this very core fact. That the whole, you know, central plot of Megillat Rut, which is chapter four, is that the act of Yibum, levirate marriage. For people who are unfamiliar or for people who need a refresh, and this again, we'll see this a little bit later, but I'll talk about it right now. When someone dies childless, his brother is expected to marry the wife of the deceased, and the children, crucially, are not considered the children of the father as much as considered the children of the deceased. It's a, again, obviously, there's a lot that we could talk about with Yibam, and we're not going to, but basically, as a general rule, and so the whole point here is what Boaz is going to play the role of is next of kin to Ruth's family, in the sense that trying to perpetuate, even though Ruth has no biological connection to Naomi, she's the daughter-in-law, in some sense, her child is going to be Naomi's child. And this is what we focused on last week, how when we actually carefully read the words that are written in chapter 3, as opposed to the words that we read, because we spoke about krei u'kativ, the fact that there often are two different framings of the same word preserved within the text of Tanakh, you can actually read Naomi's or Ruth's attempts to seduce Boaz as really Naomi's attempt through the agent of Ruth. But in many ways, Ruth can simply be seen as the tool of Naomi. That's not to use that term in any sort of negative sense, but really she is carrying out Naomi's life, and Ruth is merely a background character in Naomi's story. And the most interesting proof to all of this, and now as we turn to the source sheet, is to notice that even when Naomi isn't front and center of a scene, she's being referenced. Most characters in Megillat Ruth are known by their and referenced by their relationship to Naomi. So if you take a look at the first source on the sheet, which is the opening verse to chapter 2, again, for those listening live on Zoom, the source sheet can be found by clicking on the chat, then it's there. For those people listening on Wayu Torah after the fact, it should be posted side by side. We read, Ul Naomi moda le'isha ish gibor chayil mishpachat Elimelech u'shmo Boaz. This is the introduction to Boaz. We fixated 2 weeks ago on everything but the fact that Boaz is actually introduced as Naomi's kinsman. He is somehow related to Naomi and Elimelech. Boaz is, and this is because, again, the central plot point is that Boaz is related to Naomi, but it's a simple illustration of the fact that Boaz's entire existence in the story is due to his connection to Naomi. A little bit later in the story, we read, and we read this again 2 weeks ago, beginning verse 5 of chapter 2, Vayomer Boaz le'na'aro ha'nitzav ala k'tolchim le'mi ha'na'ara hazot. He asks who Ruth is. He sees this woman. He asks his attendant, who is that person? Vaya'an ha'na'ar ha'nitzav ala k'tolchim vayomer. He responds, Na'ara Moaviyahi, she is a Moabite girl, Hashava im Naomi, Mr. Moav, who came back with Naomi from Moab. Again, even within the story, it's not just a literary device where Megillah Ruth is framing everyone as relevant to Naomi, but even within the story, Ruth doesn't matter as much as Naomi matters, and Ruth happens to be a relative of Naomi. Once again, in verse 11, Vayan Boaz Vayomar Lach Hugad Li Kol Asher Asita Et Chamoteich. I have heard everything you've done for your mother-in-law. He's turning around to Ruth. He's complimenting her, but he's referencing her in relationship to Naomi, how she left her father and mother, and she came to a people you didn't know everything about. Ruth and this story is about Naomi. And we see this in the final chapter of Megillat Ruth most extremely. So the story tells us, Uvoaz ala hasha'ar vayeshev sham. Boaz is sitting down at the gate. Vihine ha-goel over asher diber Boaz. The redeemer whom Boaz had mentioned happens to be there at the same time. Vayome sur shva po ploni almoni. He calls, Boaz goes over to the Redeemer and says, come over here, Ploni Almoni. We'll come back to that for the second question. But he summons Ploni Almoni, Vayasar Vayeshev. He sits down. Boaz summons the elders. That's what verse 2 tells us. Vayomer in verse 3, Lagoal, Boaz says to the Redeemer, Chelkat hasadeh asher la'achinu le'elimelech michra Naomi, hashava mister Moav, Naomi has returned from the country, and now we need to kind of redeem her. again, the entire focus of redemption is not actually on Naomi, but it is not on Ruth, but on Naomi. Vayoma Boaz Lizkenim B'chol Ha'am, verse 9. Edim Atem Hayom Ki Kenite Et Kol Asher La'Eli Melech Ve'Eit Kol Asher L'Chilion U'Machlon Miyad Naomi. I'm acquiring everything that belongs to Naomi. Ruth is central to this story, obviously, but always simply as almost an avatar of Naomi. Ultimately, what matters is Naomi, and through Ruth, Naomi's, you know, Naomi will find her fulfillment, will find her need. And this is put crazily in basically not the concluding verses of the entire Megillah, but the concluding verses of the story. We read beginning verse 13 of chapter 4 of Megillat Ruth. Vayikach Boaz et Ruth, vatehilo le'isha. Boaz married Ruth, took her for his wife, vayavo eleha, vayetien Hashem la, herayon vateled ben. And Ruth conceives, and she bears a son. Vatomarna hanashim el Naomi. The women, upon hearing this news, turn to Naomi and say, Baruch Hashem asher lo hishpita lach goel hayom. Blessed be God who did not withhold a redeemer from you, Naomi. Vayikare shmo b'Yisrael. May his name be perpetuated. May he make a name for himself in the land of Israel. In other words, the reaction to Ruth and Boaz having a child is, this is good news for Naomi. Naomi, in some ways, has herself had a child. Verse 15 says, "V'hayalach l'meishiv neshek, he shall be for you a restoration of yourself. Unchalkel et sevatecha, he shall sustain your old age. Ki chalteich asher ahivateich yeladata. For he is born of your daughter-in-law, asher hi tova lach, who is good to you. Mishiv'a banim, then seven of your own sons." Vatikach Naomi et hayeled vat shitehu bechekah. She takes the baby and she puts it to herself. Vatehila laomenet, and she became its foster mother. Vatikrena lo hashcheinot shem lemor yulad ben la Naomi. The women said, a child has been born to Naomi. Vatikrena shema oved. And they named him Oved, who Avi Yishai, Avi David. He was the father of Yishai, the father of David. I was saying great, 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 great. Really, it's just great. But clearly, what we see is that everything about Megillat Ruth's story is really about Naomi. It is effectively Naomi's child. Boaz may marry Ruth, but he's really taking ownership of everything regarding Naomi. This is actually Naomi's story. We call it Megillat Ruth, but in many ways we should call it Megillat Naomi, because really it is all about her. The story ends with her having found sustenance, with her having perpetuated her family's line. But all through Ruth, yes, Ruth is the ultimate reason why Naomi is able to achieve all of these things. But the focus of the story always has actually been Naomi. So even though we've not really focused on Naomi until the last 10 minutes, the truth is, in many ways, every single other part of the story is all about Naomi and her future and her life. The second thing that I want to focus on is really interesting. And it's the identity of Ploni Almoni. So Ploni Almoni very much appears to be the equivalent of John, what we would say John Doe in America. Ploni Almoni is an anonymous term. Ploni Almoni is not the Redeemer's name, but rather he is referred to as so-and-so. Come over here, so-and-so. It's important just to kind of recap again the narrative. Boaz, we saw this last week. It kind of came up in the sources we just read, but just to really make sure everyone's on the same page, Boaz is going to redeem Naomi. by marrying Rut, by having a child through her, and thus perpetuating the name really of Elimelech and Naomi. But he is not actually the next of kin. Again, the way Yibam works is you're looking for the next of kin. And Boaz is not the next of kin. There is someone else. Again, it's explicitly stated in chapter 3. This anonymous, unknown Goel, the Redeemer, Ploni Almoni, what's his face? That's what Ploni Almoni means, what's his face. What's his face is actually the first in line. And in chapter 4, it begins with Boaz encouraging, offering what's his face the opportunity to be the redeemer, to marry Rut, etc., 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 and what's-his-face says no. It is very, very interesting when Tanakh decides not to give someone a name, not to give someone a title, even though he does get the title Goel, the redeemer, but instead to just call him what's-his-face. It seems very strange. It's interesting to note that Ploni Almoni actually occurs in two other locations in Tanakh, both of which are not actually to name a person, but to name a location. If you take a look on the source sheet, the next source is from Sefer Shmuel Aleph, chapter 21, verse 3 of Shmuel Aleph. And David is basically, you know, doing things in secret. Vayomer David la'achimelech ha-kohen, ha-melech tzivani davar, the king has ordered me on a mission, is what David says to the priest. Vayomer elai ish al yede mu'uma et hadavar sha'ar anarchi sha'ilechacha, v'asher tzividicha, no one can know anything about the mission I am sending you on, that I've given you orders, v'et hanayarim yodati, el mekom ploni almoni, the people have been directed to such and such a place. In other words, Ploni Almoni is used here to describe essentially a secret location, something that is military sensitive, and therefore the public cannot know where David is going. Ploni Almoni means anonymous, classified, unknown. This also occurs in chapter 6 of Malachim Bet, verse 8. Umelech Aram haya nilcham b'Yisrael. The king of Aram was waging war with Israel. Vayiva'at el avadav lemor. He took counsel with his officers, saying, El makom ploni almoni tacha noti. I will encamp in such and such a place. In other words, secret location. Ploni almoni obscures an identity. Again, it occurs in two other locations in Tanakh to obscure a physical place. Ploni Almoni is here being used. It's almost, and this is maybe the imagery is on point here, we are redacting the name of the Goel. Ploni Almoni is being used here to redact the name of the first in line to redeem Rut. Ploni Almoni means name withheld, name redacted. Tanakh does not want us to know the name of this figure. Again, there are midrashim that try to identify him, that try to suggest his name, or at the very least who exactly he is. But the point is, whether or not his name was Jeff doesn't matter. The fact is, Tanakh does not want us to know this. He is redacted. It's as though a giant black mark is scrawled through Tanakh, crossing out the name of the person, and instead we refer to them simply as Ploni Almoni, what's his face? Why? It's a very, very strange thing for Tanakh to do. Sometimes, again, Tanakh does go for anonymity. We don't get always the names of people. Sometimes people are just the man, the woman. The pharaoh, Paro, famously, is never actually named in Tanakh. He's just always Paro. But that point is, it's still a title. Or when anonymity is given, it's explicit anonymity. It's the man, the person, the woman, the wife of X. We at least get a descriptor. This, however, is different. Tanakh gives this person just a different non-name. Unlike anonymous people, where we're given that generic title, or was, you know, I forget the actual verse when it describes the birth of Moshe, but it's like, Vayikach ish mi beit Levi, that's probably not the actual verse, but you know, a Levite man. A Levite man is just simply not telling us his name, but it's telling us something else. What we see here instead is that the name is there, but it's being obscured. It's important when we, again, if we're, when we look at this, when we look at chapter, the beginning of chapter 4, verse 1, when Boaz turns around and says, Vayomes sushva poploni almoni. What's his face? Come and sit over here. Boaz didn't call him what's his face. Boaz called him Jeff, or whatever his name was. Wasn't Jeff. Boaz called him his actual name. But what Tanakh is doing is saying, nope, we are not going to tell you his name. We are instead going to obscure it and call him instead Ploni Almoni. It's the equivalent of it being beeped out, bleeped out, or it being, you know, obscured in some way. You know, sometimes he who must not be named, or you know who, in Harry Potter, if you're a Harry Potter fan. You know, we don't actually say the name Voldemort. We say you know who. It's an intentional obscuring of the name. We don't want to say the name of Ploni Almoni. We don't know what it is. Why? So the next source I gave you was Rashi on the first verse of chapter 4. So what Rashi does do, which I don't really want to read through, but Rashi tries to give, because Ploni Almoni as a grammatical construct is kind of interesting. What exactly does it mean? It has that delightful rhyme, Ploni Almoni, which kind of, it's like John Doe-ish, but it's, in England, Joe Bloggs is I feel like sometimes used instead of John Doe, but it's the same idea. But Rashi tries to explain what Ploni Almoni means, but most interesting is Rashi's first comment. On Ploni Almoni, Rashi says, "Velo nichtav shmo." Tanakh did not write his name. Lefi shelo ava ligol, because he did not wish to redeem. In other words, the Goel did some sort of egregious sin to the point that it was so bad that Tanakh doesn't want to know the name of this person. Now, again, there are other instances in Tanakh where ostensibly someone is committing a sin. A few weeks ago, the end of Parashat Emor, where we have the blasphemer, who, again, we don't know the name of. But the point here is, it's not just we're not told the name, but the name is obscured. The name is being used in converse. People are talking to this person, but the name is being bleeped out. It's being redacted. It's being taken away. Why? Why is this unique punishment being reserved for Ploni Almoni? So it's important to recognize the entire purpose, the institution of Yibum, both as it's referenced first in Megillat Rut, but also as it's referenced in its core location, which is Sefer Dvarim. So if you look at verse 5 of chapter 4 of Rut, and then we'll also look at verse 10, we see Boaz instructing Ploni Almoni. Vayomer Boaz, Biyom kenotcha hasadeh miyad Naomi, when you acquire the field from Naomi, Naomi's property, umeit Rut hamoaviyah eshet hamait, and Rut the Moabite, you will all, umeit Rut hamoaviyah eshet hamait kanita, you will also acquire Rut, the wife of the deceased, Lohokim et Shem Hamet al Nachalato, in order to perpetuate the name of the deceased upon his estate. And Ploni Almoni says no. And then when Boaz agrees to do it, he says, Vegam, verse 10, Vegam et Rut Hamoviah, Eshet Machlon, Kaniti Lili Isha. I am acquiring the wife of Machlon, Lahakim Shem Hamet al Nachalato, in order to perpetuate the name of the deceased upon his estate. So that the name never disappears from among his kinsmen. You are your witnesses. In other words, the whole institution of Yibam, says Megillat Rut, is in order to perpetuate the name of the deceased. It's a very, very strange institution, a very, very complicated one for us to wrap our heads around. But the point is essentially that Boaz might be marrying Ruth. Boaz might be the child of Ruth, but, and this is what I didn't think they were twin to one another, but why the two things we're talking about are twinned, that is kind of why Naomi becomes the pseudo mother of the child, because really it is perpetual. Naomi has very loose blood relations to either Ruth or Boaz. She has none to Ruth, and Boaz is ostensibly a relative of Elimelech, not a relative of Naomi, but the fact is that this entire marriage between Boaz and Ruth is perpetuating the name of the children of Elimelech, and therefore Elimelech and Naomi themselves. What happens if you refuse to perpetuate the name of someone else? Your name is stricken from the record. This is, Yael Ziegel makes this point very emphatically, and I think it's totally correct, and it's brilliant and fascinating. Ploni Almoni's name is redacted from Tanakh because he didn't deserve to be remembered. But it didn't do it in a way that kind of makes him anonymous, like Paro. Who was Paro? We don't know his name. But to consciously let us know, to bleep out his name. Boaz is saying, come over here, Jeff. But we don't know that. We just hear, come over here, Ploni Almoni. We get to know this person had a name because they take place in direct conversations with one another. They are referred to, but we don't get to know their name because they don't deserve to have their name remembered. And the truth is, this is effectively what the Torah spells out. If you take a look at the final source on the sheet, it's from chapter 5 of Sefer Devarim, beginning with verse 6. In detailing the laws of Yibam, V'haya ha-b'chor asher teled yakum al shem achiv hamet, the first child that she bears, shall be considered the child of the deceased brother. V'lo yimacher shmo miyisrael, so that his name is not blotted out from the Jewish people. But if the man does not want to take his brother's widow as a wife, the widow now goes to the gate, in other words, to where the elders are assembled, and she says to them, my husband's brother refuses to establish a name in Israel for his brother. Lo avayabmi, he won't perform his Levirate duty. The karul zignei irov v'daburilav, he's summoned by the elders. Va'amad va'amar, they talk to him. Lo chafatzti lakachta, and if he insists and says, I don't want to take her. Verse 9. V'nikshay yevimto elav le'nezakenim. Le'enei hazakedim, the brother's widow shall go into the presence of the elders. V'chaltzan na'alo me'al raglo, shall take off her shoe, her sandal from her foot. V'yarkar b'fanav, spit in his face. V'anta v'amra, and make this declaration. Kacha ye'oseh lo'ish, such shall be done to a person. Asher lo yivneh et beit achiv, who will not build up his brother's house. It's about as, you know, insulting as it gets. V'nikra shma b'Yisrael, and this person's name shall now be in the land of Israel, Beit Chalutz Hana'al, the family of the unsandaled one. In other words, he loses his name in order to be a... If he refuses Yibam, we no longer call him the name he wants. Instead, he is effectively told to walk around with a giant hat on his head saying, my name is Yibam Rejecter. You lose your right to a name, says the Torah, if you won't fulfill the name of your deceased. And so Ploni Almoni is simply that being put into practice. Tanakh says earlier in itself, in Sefer Devarim, in the Torah, that when someone refuses to do Yibam, when someone refuses to uphold a kinsman's name, they lose the right to the name. And so later in Tanakh, in Megillat Rut, when we read the story of this person who had a name, but refused to do Yibam. The Torah, the Megillah, sorry, refuses to call him by his name. He is Ploni Almoni. He is what's his face. He doesn't deserve to have his name remembered because he refused to do Yibam. And so when we come across Ploni Almoni, and it's this very striking, strange phrase, it's a very, very interesting framing for the Megillah to use. It indicates, it teaches us really the grievousness of what Ploni Almoni did, in that it was so extreme that not only was his name written out of Tanakh, but his name was consciously written out of Tanakh by Tanakh, leaving a void. There are some people who we don't get their names, but that's fine. It's okay, why don't we get the name? It's interesting, but this person had a name. So clearly had that name used within the story and yet had it redacted in order to indicate the seriousness of what they had done. Thus ends our exploration of Megillat Rut for this year. And hopefully everyone will have a wonderful Shavuot and a slightly more meaningful experience as Megillat Rut is read this year.